This is RSVB Update, episode 615, recorded Thursday, April 20th, 2017. Enterprising Achievements. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update. Ciaran and I are here this week, as per usual. Welcome back.
Shane made me come this week. I didn't want to, but he made me.
Yeah, people say that about me. I can be very persuasive on that agenda, but... You know, this is getting off to exactly the right track we wanted, isn't it?
Yeah.
you would be amazed at the discussions that we have in pre-show. You called this week's podcast a visit to the dentist.
Yeah. It's not the right analogy, but yeah.
Meanwhile, I equated it with the feeling of going to a funeral. Something you have to do, but you don't want to do.
Yeah, something in between, maybe, but... Or maybe a funeral while you're at the dentist.
Gosh. So
that would get weird.
Cue Amazing Grace in the background, and...
Yeah.
What else? But, anyways, this is not... We are not funeral planners here, even though that could be a job if I wanted it to be. We have an update to RuneScape this week, the new achievements and path system. I think by you guys hearing the way we're talking about this right now, you might think that this is the update from hell, and we absolutely despise this update. I think that couldn't be further than the truth, because I think we should start off by saying that both you and I had the... absolute highest expectations for this update.
I mean, this was going to be my update of the month. This was an update I've been looking forward to for like a couple of months now, I think, ever since they first announced it.
Yeah.
I whittled on the episode that we found out that this was happening for like, I think, a good 20 minutes about the possibilities.
Yeah, I remember all the various design aspects you said we could have worked into here.
Yeah, and the amazing possibilities that this would have like given. So I was looking forward to this update and had like a lot of expectations, and while I realized that I didn't expect everything to be worked into this system right from the start. I expected it to have feature parity with everything we have in game right now, but have it be a solid foundation for those future changes. So I was really excited to see what was happening. I was really excited to start using it in slowly taking off the like tasks to like Master Quest Cape and Completionist. So like the expectations for this update were really, really high. And I mean, that makes it easy to be disappointed, but I think even with very neutral, objective looking at this, there are some flaws in this update.
And to be fair here, this isn't going to be, you know, this is the absolute most horrible update ever, and it should be removed from the game kind of thing, and Jagex are idiots for making it. That's not what you're going to hear here today. In fact, I'd actually like to start out with something good that came from this, and I think perhaps one of the things that's the best executed from here for a new player is the series of new paths that they brought in that allows someone who's just starting the game to have a look at some various things that they can do. So that is half of this user interface, it would seem here, the new path updates. And they added new paths, rather, for things like the Elven City of Priftinus, accessing the God Wars via the original God Wars dungeon via the path, or maybe even the God Wars teleport, as two examples. They even have paths to get you started on bossing. So basically, paths such as getting you to Priftinus or bossing. I think that is done pretty well with this new achievement system.
I mean, I really like the idea. The
Yeah,
obvious
like the
flaw
idea
here,
behind it is there.
the obvious flaw I found, the only obvious flaw I found in the system is that it's sort of very member content focused. And what I would have liked to see is, for example, something that focuses more about, for example, finishing Dragon Slayer, which is sort of the climax of the free-to-play experience, right? That's sort of the best you can
Right.
do
And you need
in
that
terms of
to wear the rune
questings.
plate body.
Yeah, so that's like it's a pretty big deal. It also unlocks, like, I think the Mystic body and the
What's the ranged one? I don't recall.
Dragonhide, Green Dagger,
Dragonhide.
Dragonhide.
Right, Green Dragonhide.
Yeah, so it unlocks those things, so it's a pretty big deal, and there's nothing really there to push to that. While the actual new adventure is sort of just has lists or quests you can do, and not really other things, I feel. So, I mean, in terms of content, could be improved maybe, but I think it's a really good start, and I'm really hoping they get rid of the original path system and incorporate it here, so that there's a central place for that.
Yeah. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with free to play quests and whatnot. Like that would be a great way to upsell people on members is to get them started doing various quests and then, oh, our next chapter in this quest line is a member's quest. Perhaps you should consider subscribing to members if you enjoyed the storyline so far, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's some possibility for that. You have to be careful, of course. You don't get players into lots
Right.
of these dead ends. But so I think you need a right mix of stuff right now. Because if you were a free player, I don't know if it shows up like all the paths if you're a free to play account. But let's say you have all these things, you can do maybe like three of them, and there's like nine others or something you can do, which is great. But I think there should also be some more things you can do as a free player, because it now really feels like there's not much to the free to play experience, but except for starting your adventure and maybe doing some combat.
Right,
While
and
there is consistent, like there's quite a bit of content for a free player.
yeah, and I mean, we looked at that a couple of weeks ago with the rework of the Imp Catcher quest, for example. So, various things like that, I think this can accomplish well. And, I think that a new player who uses the system, once it gets filled out, will find it useful. Now, that comes with a big if. And that
If
big if is that if you can figure out how to use the system, how it is right now. Well, I mean, if you go on a path, okay, that's good. And you can pop open the new active achievement thing, assuming you activate on your path, and you'll be good to go. And you can get that as a little side window that you can dock to the side of your screen. But the main achievements window under the hero main menu, I don't know how to describe this because, like, you first open this window up and you're greeted with a screen that shows you how many of the achievements you have completed. I'm currently at 885 out of 1203. And then below that, it shows your recently completed achievements with areas for four of them. And, something that was really absurd to me, and, I've done this a million times before, is I teleported to Trollheim and I got an achievement complete for doing that at level 138 combat and 2600 plus total level.
Yeah, that's because it's part of the God Boss dungeon path.
Oh, that's lovely. All right. So on this screen, you see almost there, and it shows your achievements that you are almost near completing. So one of the first ones it showed was that I could go get more kudos at the Varrock Museum. Okay. The achievement was called Kudos to You, but on this page here, there's nothing that says it's at the Varrock Museum. There's no way for me to click that achievement and go to a more info display that would tell me to go to the Varrock Museum and what exactly a kudos is if I w wasn't aware of that to begin with. And the overview page is completely separate from the actual achievement page. So it's almost as if they are two distinct user interface systems that don't interact with one another at all, which is kind of absurd because how are you supposed to find Kudos to You or the next one, Claws is Rising, out of 1,203 achievements?
So, Shane, do you know what it suggested for me to do?
What did it suggest to you?
Collect miscellaneous notes.
And what is that?
I don't know. I think it might be dungeoneering lore drops, but that's just speculation by now. Yeah. It wasn't very descriptive.
See,
and these are things that are part of like trimmed completionist requirements or like
exactly.
Master Quest Cave requirement. Those are long lists for me still because I still have a lot of lore drops to go. So there's no way I can figure out what it is.
You open that up and you can't click on it. And even if you did manage to find it in the grand achievements list, it doesn't give you any info on how to complete it. Like, you can't mouse over it and see where to do it or, you know, what your progress is at, even though they said we were going to get progress bars along the way. That would kind of...
Even though it's aware that you almost completed it and shows you on the initial page how far you are, if you actually go and look it up, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Like... I found Kudos to You, and that's a completionist requirement. It's giving me a completionist requirement as one of the first ones I could complete, which I understand that. I might want to, you know, tick off some things that are easy to do, but how am I to find that on an interface that ultimately starts off with suggesting I level skills up to 99, and then I need to go into the completionist requirements? And
oh, yeah, I think it actually told me that I'm almost there with maxing all my skills, which means... 21 more invention levels and like 10 more dungeoneering levels, I think. Almost there, right?
Right. And, you know, this has also incorporated the old task sets. So you'll find tasks for the dungeoneering and Mauritania and Karamja and all those task set also in here. And for those of you guys who remember the old system, you will be... reminded that previously it would tell you a bit of a hint as to how to complete that. It would tell you where to complete it and what levels you needed if you weren't able to complete it. So now you're given a list and the achievement appears as red if you are unable to complete it. And you're kind of left to your own wits to figure out what the achievement actually is, providing the description, you know, isn't up to par, because, you know, some of these really aren't up to par, because, like, for example, thoroughly aghast looking at my Mauritania task set that I haven't gone back to in a long time, summon a ghast familiar in Mauritania. All right, I know what that is personally because I have done temple trekking before, and I know that's a reward that you can get from that. But how is someone who is just starting off the member's experience and working through Mauritania going to know what this is until they stumble upon temple trekking?
Using the RS Wiki.
And see, that was my second thought as well. Are we trying to make players more self-sufficient in that they need to go back to other sources to try and figure out what's going on in game? Because that seems like kind of a reversion of the steps that we've been taking in the past. So granted, I just picked this task right here, but the same can be said for lots of other tasks. And, you know, at the end of the day, feels as though we're being given blind direction on this, which, you know, would be in total concert with what Jagex said they wanted to do this year, allowing players to kind of gain back the adventuring experience and figuring things out for themselves without aid. But, I mean...
the achievement system is not just a checklist, right? It is...
It's supposed to provide encouragement.
Yes, that is exactly what the achievement system is supposed to do. It's supposed to direct the player to, if they log in, to give them some ideas about what to do. But if it tells you to summon a gas familiar in Mauritania, that's not direction at all. That just tells you the end goal without any hint as to how to do that.
Yeah.
So you dismiss it, and you start looking for another task, and it tells you to collect miscellaneous notes, whatever that might be. That's not really helpful at all, and you can keep going on, and there's lots of these tasks that don't really give you guidance. It what the system should be doing is it should be telling you, look, you're really close to collecting these lore drops. If you go and do some dungeoneering now, you might get it. And you're like, hey, that makes sense. I'll do some dungeoneering. I need some experience anyway. And that would be a good way to guide the player and make their experience with RuneScape more varied and interesting. And it just doesn't do that.
And here's another thing. I'm level 138 combat. I went into the solo PVM group of the achievements, and its achievement was to kill a goblin in Goblin Village.
I think I did that, but see, this like now that you mentioned the whole PVM thing, it sort of brings up like the other point I had with the system is when you go to the initial interface, you'll notice, I think for everybody, that there's only like one or two PVM tasks you have to
Yeah,
complete.
they're probably going to add more in the future.
And there was like 12 of them, and that was a bit surprising to me because like I'm not that much of a PVM fan, but I'm also not that bad. So I click the PVM category to find out what the tasks are I still have to do, and it's empty. Like if you click PVM in the left, it's completely empty. While the previous page I visited clearly said I had like basically everything to go, and I had to click to the subcategories to find out what exactly was happening. In this case, it's that all the different raids achievements are in there, which is a bit ludicrous, I think, because the average player is not going to be able to complete those. So yeah, and the same happens with like the task sets. It's a bit of a weird mix of what is happening in the menu where you click the categories doesn't seem to reflect what's happening in the right bar at all. Like it's supposed to show some sort of hierarchy, but nothing really matches with each other, which makes the whole thing really hard to navigate. And then some tasks, like task sets, have like subtasks. And if you accidentally click those, you get navigated to the collection of subtasks you have to complete, but then there's no way to get back. And then all in all, you just jump around the interface,
And another
clicking
thing,
on things.
if you click on one of the bosses, you get taken to the beast menu, which is an entirely different menu, and you close the achievements window, and there's no way of getting back.
That's interesting. I didn't know they did that. But yeah, all in all, like you get jumped around in the interface so much. There's no clear structure. It's not top down. It's like if you have a good menu or interface design, it would look like a bit tree structured, if that makes sense. Like you have some high level
Like a
choices and then
Windows
you
Explorer window, maybe.
yeah, that's how you, like a, more of a directory structure. You can have shortcuts, but you should be using those sparingly because otherwise you lose the structure. And you should make sure that the entire interface sort of represents where you are. In Windows Explorer, it would show you the entire folder structure in the top. And that's missing here. You just get jumped from random folder to random folder. And then all of a sudden you click one thing and it opens up like a whole new program. And like that's sort of what's happening. And I don't, I have,
I feel
I've,
like I'm beating a dead horse.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of express how what's going on here, but all I can say is that it just doesn't seem well thought through. Like I don't know.
If I could be, I would be speechless. I haven't been speechless only once before on this podcast, and I think that was a few weeks ago. Or maybe
Yeah, I mean,
that was this
I
show, right? Or,
Might be,
okay.
but
But
yeah,
anyways.
all in all, like that is, I think, the right response. Like you'd think that somebody designed this, you'd think that somebody signed off on this, you'd think that some tester went through this and shared their experience with this interface, and you'd think that somewhere along the progress, somebody should have said, this is maybe not quite as intuitive for somebody who was not involved in the design of this interface. And that never happened. And that stumps
Well,
me.
I got one for you. Whenever you get a level on a new account, it was given the message new combat level earned, even when you were getting skills such as fishing leveled up.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's one issue. Another issue is, you know, how do you complete the achievement? We already talked about this, how they're not linked, because you go from an overview down to a specific achievement. That's how it should be, but there's no indication of how you actually do that or how you actually start on the path of completing that achievement. So basically, we're in a situation now with this current interface where if someone wanted to do an achievement or an area task, for example, and it wasn't clear enough by what it was, they would basically go to the RS Wiki and Google it.
Yeah, I mean
And
the paths as well, right? Like you select a path, but there's no way to track it, and it's also not really a path. It's just like a bunch of tasks just thrown at you, and it's up to you to figure out what it's about. Like, let's say you do the new adventure path, right? It tells you to complete the quest Gunner's Ground.
And that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. It might give you the side point if you're lucky. I haven't really checked, but.
Yeah, and
This is the
see,
new players that use this.
right. So that's an issue with a new player. Now, veteran players are also going to have a problem with this because if you're a completionist and you've completed all 1,203 tasks, this window shows nothing for you. This is a useless interface.
It probably
Which,
it doesn't even have like a nice empty state,
no,
like
I mean, it doesn't even congratulate you on doing that.
no.
And, you know, that's understandable if there's going to be more achievements added in, which Jagex said they're going to do. So we're willing to wait on that, I think. We're not requesting, you know, 500 new achievements be added today. I think that would be rather impractical, right?
I mean, I would have been completely happy if there were no new achievements. It had just a bunch of stuff existing built in, but at least a functional interface. This broke a lot of people's workflows. Like, I can't easily just go to the completionist tab and pick something up. I have to scroll through a list of things and sort of decode what they all mean.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. And you know, same thing with the task sets. If you were working on a task set previously, you could filter by difficulty. You can't do that anymore.
that makes no sense. Why did they remove that?
And I mean, let's just even talk about assets for a minute here, because on my teleport, or maybe it does change color based on that. I mean, I didn't scroll down far enough on that list to tell. Hold back on that previous point, that doesn't tell you difficulty. That might be a maybe. But my achievement for teleporting to Trollheim greeted me with the teleport icon for Trollheim, and it was scaled up to a point where the icon was blurry. I mean, if you're going to put assets in that are going to be 100 pixels wide, make sure they can be stretched to be 100 pixels wide and not be distorted. Because everyone has at least a 1080p screen now, at least most people do.
I mean, I think we established that there are some severe problems with this interface, and I could have forgiven problems with this system. I mean, they are very, very, very problematic. So maybe not quite this severe, but I could have forgiven problems with this interface if I knew that this was a launch and iterate process, right? They're gonna add more stuff. They're gonna make improvements to the system as new things get added, that kind of stuff. This was supposed to be a foundation for a lot of future stuff. The problem is that Jagex hasn't gotten a great track record of releasing something and then promising expanding on it in the future and then doing it, actually doing it. I mean, a few notable examples, like you mentioned the group system. Like, we haven't really seen any improvements on that except for when raids came out.
Yeah, and I hid that from my interface completely because that's how useful it was.
Then there is, for example, Clan Citadels. Like, that's another thing that was announced with huge fanfare, and then nothing really happened with it. The entire clan system sort of felt dead. I mean, can I come up with more examples? Probably, but like, I think the idea is clear that lots of things sort of get released and then sort of hang because and never get picked up again. And that's probably part of the upsetting part of this update is that there is this fear that, we are stuck with what we have right now, and we'll probably see a bunch of fixes maybe like next week, but I doubt they will really pick this up.
Yeah, they're not going to be huge changes.
No, I doubt it. Jagex doesn't do that stuff very often.
Yeah.
And that makes this a problem, because this is, I think, an essential part of the game, and
it's broken right now.
The point is, this should have gotten a lot more effort put into it. I think Jagex is severely underestimating the significance of this system, especially given that the tutorial in Inkscape is fairly short, very limited, and very basic. This is sort of supposed to put you off on the world. This is supposed to be the connection between a new player and a player that knows what they're doing. And it's just not working right now. And this was also a tool that could have been used to revive minigames. This could have been used to center activity in certain areas, make the game feel more active and more social. This could have been used to incorporate daily challenges, make them bigger and wider, and make people do stuff together. This could have incorporated so much stuff, and without this strong basis, that's all not going to happen. And that is all huge missed opportunities. And I think we need these opportunities these days.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And just an update on this. There is no color change when scrolling through harder achievements. So.
I think we made the point clear on like what we think about this update. I think something that is worth mentioning is what repercussions or what conclusions we can draw from this update coming out in the state that it is.
Yeah, and you know, that's actually a very good point, is that, you know, this could have been a huge update, but the idea behind it was great. It's just the execution really seems to have fallen flat.
Mm-hmm. And I compared this system to Guild Wars 2 system. I compared this to World of Warcraft system of exploration, where like every time you enter a new area, you make some progress towards an achievement, you get some experience, which rewards exploration. And in Guild Wars 2, the main use case is like every day you get like 8 tasks, and if you complete 5, you get a big reward. I mean, imagine that. Imagine that every day everybody gets the same, say, 8 tasks assigned to it. If you complete 5, you get a mystery box.
Yep.
I mean, everybody gets the same activity. So if the activity says, go play Barbarian Assault one game, you get lots of people playing Barbarian Assault.
And that would do even more than the spotlight system.
It would. And there's so much potential there. And like just the fact that that doesn't get the significance assigned to it that it does is problematic, especially given the other big things that are supposed to revive RuneScape are coming out this year. And I'm in particularly referring to both Shattered Worlds and Manifolds, of course.
Two very hyped updates that need to succeed.
Yeah, like if this is the level of execution that we see from Jagex, is the competence, is the skill to do the implementation of these, is it even present within Jagex?
I think it is present. I just think it's a problem of that we talked about last week, too much reliance on the player base to make opinions and guide updates, because you know, we had a survey on this, and we had a video on this, and a Q&A, and everything. We had the whole works, but yet this comes out.
But do you think it's player feedback that made the interface be such a scrambled mess?
Well, I think to a degree, Jagex is tiptoeing around on the interface because, as we talked about before, they would love to do something probably that can be revolutionary. But if they do that, how is that going to feel to the 50% of the population who either like something or don't? So that's one side of the hand. And the other side of it is that you get I think what you're describing is an incomplete process. I think they have the talent. I just don't think they're doing it right. And the other side that I mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, what they need is somebody to go and sit and design this. And then you can collect player feedback. But instead of just incorporating the player feedback into your design, you should see what the root cause for that feedback is.
Yep.
Try and extract why people are saying that. And then finding your own solutions, which may match the players or maybe something completely different, and incorporate those in your solution. Like, it's not a 1-1 thing. Like, player feedback, yes. But sometimes you have to deviate from player feedback because you're the expert. So they need somebody to properly design it. Then they need people to test it without foreknowledge, without knowing how the system works in advance.
Exactly.
So that they can emulate a new player's experience with it. And then they need somebody to sign off. I think what Jerix is missing, because of this really solid release schedule of one release every week, I think what they need is they need some person, some executive person to say, yes, we can ship this. This is of a sufficiently good quality. And I think that's also missing because, like, there's this hard date where it has to go out.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing on that, I've long called for this and it could be done, but player test server.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I mean, and this really makes me worry because we have a release date for Manifest, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
That's going to go out if whether it's ready or not. And I am not sure if it's going to be ready. And it's the biggest hyped up thing this year. Like, how many people are waiting for it? How many people are waiting for 120 Slayer to be amazing? How many people are retaining their membership currently because they want to experience Manifest? How many people got premium because of that?
You hit the nail on the head, and that leads to the most disturbing point from this update, is if this can happen with the achievement system, which is, you know, on the core of it, maybe a few new mechanics under the hood, but largely an interface change. If this can go bad, if this can go this bad and not be usable when it comes out, what is the cost to Jagex and the player base if this happens with one of the expansions this year?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something for everyone to chew on and think on. Obviously, we don't want that to happen, but
the position of RuneScape and Jagex is probably sufficiently fragile that these things are going to have a really, really big impact. Like, we already have this weird split in community between old school RuneScape and IS3, which is putting, I think, the community in a more vulnerable position. And these big failures, like, every game can only have so many of them. But, like, especially if you're in a position where user trust is not at its highest, then you have to be really, really careful that you don't do these weird stunts too often, because then you get real trouble.
Yeah. Continue.
I wanted this to be a good update so badly because I understand the significance of it, and I wanted to trust JackX on this. I did. I said I trusted them to do right and to make sure this is a good system, and then they failed me. And I don't think I've ever had this big of a hit in JackX trust as this week.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if this update was any larger, it would be a case for somebody to be fired at JagX if this kind of update went live.
Yes, and that is the point, right? What we need, I mean, we need this fixed, obviously, but what I think I would want more is somebody to take responsibility and say, all right, we done goof.
Yeah. Yeah, you told me a good story about that in the past, but I think we can leave that out of the podcast about about goofing up and taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of needs to happen at JAX. And, you know, we've been on this for a long time now. So, I mean, I think we got the core aspect out. But if you had to, you know, just do a quick fix on this before next week, what would you do? Like, how would you fix this before next week?
Oh, that's a tough one. A quick fix.
Yeah, a quick fix just to make it usable.
Well, I would make on like the main interface where it suggests things you're close, I would make that clickable.
I agree with that.
I would also probably make links within, so there's like the categories like PVM, right? I would not make the entire thing clickable, would probably have like a button that makes you go to the page that has all the PVM achievements. And I'd make the menus actually like in the actual achievement interface be actually hierarchical, because right now like it's not clear where to go for certain achievements. That should probably just be a hierarchy for now and maybe do something smarter, more sophisticated in the future.
Yeah.
But
All right.
yeah,
And in addition
somebody
to
needs.
that, I would say bring back the text that was on the old achievement system, the explaining
I
text.
mean, I'm almost tempted to say roll back this update, fix it, and re-release it. That would be the best course of action. That would be the best saying, Jagger saying, all right, this, we understand this is not what we were looking for, and we are going to go back to the drawing table and fix this up. And meanwhile, here's the old system, which will suffice for the next few weeks. But how are they going to put it in the schedule? That's the point. There's such a tight update schedule. I don't think they will do it, but that's what we need. And it's a, and it's Jagex's move now to prove that they can regain this user trust. Because if they
Yeah.
don't do anything about this, they're going to lose a lot of
And
kudos. Ha!
oh, that's pretty funny. And you know, the group system when that came out, that was equally as bad as this. Actually, this is probably worse than the group system when it came out, but at least the group system wasn't replacing something that was a new thing into game, so we didn't truly depend on it that much. But ay, ay, ay. You always seem to get stuck with these updates that need lots of work. The Ark and now this.
I mean, I apparently got the nickname Batlock Charm in our clan, so that might have something to do with it.
Oh boy. All right. Well, let's move on to some achievements for this week. Maybe we can find something good
You
here.
mean you mean bug fixes.
Okay. Oh, did I say achievements?
Yes. But in comparison to the actual updates, they're pretty good achievements.
Next is Ice Prison Attack no longer deals damage after death. Of course, that's Next Angel of Death. Joining a new Next Angel of Death instance as the boss dies no longer awards loot. Wow. Okay. I wish I could have taken advantage of that one.
Yeah, same here.
Next Angel of Death Reavers will no longer damage those outside the arena if not dealt with. Okay, that's scary for anyone watching. All right, so that's our next section. Now we're heading over to Mod Shawnee's buff bar update that came from last week. Buff bar filtering has been inverted on the interface. By default, all icons now show up when the checkboxes are unticked. Ticking the relevant categories checkboxes will hide the relevant icons.
So you know what the interesting part about this is?
What's that?
Like all the tooltips and descriptions on that page already implied that this was how it worked. It's just that the checkboxes did exactly the opposite as what was said. So now they actually match the behavior to what is described.
Okay, well, you know, describing that in the patch notes, that would have been better.
Yeah. But like the patch notes are generally severely lacking about explaining what exactly the old situation was. They just say what happens now.
Yeah. Clan avatar buff icons are now filtered by the skilling buff bar category instead of the boost category. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And not so much a patch note, but just a note in general. If you have a brand new account and you take a trip to the desert, the TARDIS from Back to the Freezer will appear in the desert, even if you have not done the first Penguin Quest.
Yeah, Jagger's really done goof this week.
Oh boy. All right. So we have the next community event that's going on. This one's called Build a Fair, taking place in the Lumbridge Crater, of course. And each day is a different skill, takes place from April 18th to the April 23rd. And after that, we'll get access to a huge reward chest, skills change. One day it was agility farming. The other day it was woodcutting smithing. So you're guaranteed to find something. You get 100 free tools each and every day to go there and gather all the cosmetics from it. And if you need more, you can purchase them there with rune coins. So,
you know what? I like these events.
Why is that?
I don't know. This feels so much less like a thing you have to do every day. Like, you can save it up a few days and do it whenever you can. And you go there, and there's very, very likely people doing it, doing some skilling there, and it's a bit of a social activity, and it feels less like a treasure hunter promotion or anything. It feels very much
Yeah, and I think you can buy them with loyalty points too.
Yeah, and it feels like the world is alive, that you together are working towards some community goal, and it's so much more interesting than the collect 1,000 scraps of this a day.
By and grinding a various skill.
By grinding for like 2 hours of skilling to actually max out your cap.
You hit the nail on the head right there.
And this feels so much like the world is alive, and we may not be getting these huge skill world events anymore, but these tiny things, they sort of make things more interesting. And there was, I think, the ones in the past were the Valor one. There was the God Wars 2 dungeon one, and Port Sarum.
Yeah, and so, I think this is the better way of doing it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they can't do this every week or every month. They can't do this all the time. But, I mean, I'm always happy to do these kind of things. And people say, yeah, it's the same thing. Why don't they try something new? And, I mean, this is a formula that still works, at least for me. I don't really mind. You can do it fairly quickly. It takes like a couple of minutes a day, I think, to use your free tools. So,
More than a couple of minutes. It's more like 25 or so.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Well, fair, but like, still, I mean, it's not too bad, and yeah, it actually adds something to the world instead of just pulling some random characters from out of the bag that you have to hand in random items to unlock some overrides.
And speaking of characters, this guy who is here looks like Maud Raven, the guy with the blue hat. Did you notice that?
No, I haven't been there. I've been saving up my tools.
Well, they got a picture of it on the news posting. You can have a look at that. Menowin. Looks like Maud Raven.
Oh, yeah. Wow, he does.
See, I caught that as soon as I saw that, and then I looked and double-checked, and oh, there we go.
But yeah, it's... I mean, I think it's fun, and I hope that in the future we see more small-scale world events, because I think they work really, really well. And they add a lot of tiny things to the world. So,
yep.
Just wanted to put some positivity in the week, because this is fun.
Now I got something that might be positive or negative, depending on your perspective, but Jagex is opening up the doors for combat pets, and specifically the design of the combat pets. So they want you to send a picture of the concept of your combat pet. These are going to be for each of the combat skills to competition@jagex.com. You need to include your name, the name of the pet, the skill it's for, and an illustration of the pet. Needs to be original work, no photos or art taken from elsewhere. I'll also include any other details that you want. And you can also enter on Twitter and Instagram using #MyCombatPet. Now, you know, this is for those pets that were for the combat skills, even though, you know, people who do PVM have boss pets. And yeah, I guess they wanted to capitalize on the success of the skilling pets. So I don't know. I think leaving it at boss pets would have been just fine.
Yeah, I don't think we need these pets. But all in all, it may be for the best that you're asking community for suggestions, because I'm pretty sure they can come up with something more original than a little door made out of wood and a little door made out of wood on fire.
Very true.
I mean, I'm still pretty upset about the fire making pet, to be honest. I'm really upset about it. It's so dumb.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, at least this isn't at least we're not farming out ideas for updates here, right?
No, I'm just the fire making pets from the fire maker's curse look better.
Yeah, they could have modeled them even after Bernie Sanders' friend. They probably would have got more traction.
Yeah, probably Bernie. Yeah.
Could have just made Bernie Sanders with the flaming hair ahead, and I'm sure people would have liked that, because, oh boy, that guy had lots of energy last year.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was 78 years old, and he was campaigning for president, so put him in RuneScape.
I'm really impressed with him, just on a side note.
All right, so there's that, and I don't know if that's the right way to go for pets, but I'm glad they're not doing it for updates, so I'll give them a pass on it. Jagex also this week has banned something they're calling commission staking, which is basically gambling on outcomes in-game, as in when will a certain person get X level, when will a certain person cross XXP milestone, and more importantly, who is going to win in a duel, for example. And
oh my.
So they have now modified the RuneScape rules to say that these kind of unofficial player-run games a chance are going to include commission staking, duels, and whatnot, as you can't do those.
I thought staking was really sort of died when they made all those changes to like random items, like flowers always having the same color and such.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think that did have part of a role of it. And, I mean, at this point, though, I don't know who stakes in RS3. Unless you're using legacy mode and you're kind of going for the old school mentality. But
wow. I never realized this was a thing. But yeah, I mean, this is not what you're supposed to use the game for. And I can completely understand.
And I mean, it's much like flower games and other kind of dice gambling things that were happening in the past. So,
yeah, that's what I mean. They tried getting rid of that. And then people find these ways to...
Yeah, and it's become a problem again, so definitely needs to be dealt with. And, you know, the most important reasons why are what they mention here in the post of item scamming, real-world trading, and account selling and sharing, which, you know, is something the Jags really likes to focus on now that we have bonds and whatnot in-game to limit them in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, we did mention last week that that if you have Amazon Prime, you also get something called Twitch Prime. And Jagex is running an interesting offer here. So until May 8th, if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, i.e. Twitch Prime, you'll gain 1 month of membership, an exclusive Prime Colossus Legendary bet, 15 Treasure Hunter keys, and 200 Rune Coins. So, you know, I think this is a great thing to do because so many people have Amazon Prime. And if you're going to be having Amazon Prime, you have access to this huge whole market now of people who could potentially try a month's membership of RuneScape. And, you know, they might be happy with what they see, providing they don't try and
use the achievement system.
An achievement.
Yeah, the timing on that is actually quite horrible now that I think of it, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, this was a nice surprise because I'm an Amazon Prime user in the UK, and I never realized there was this thing called Twitch Prime. So I was one of I quickly linked up my accounts, but I had some troubles like redeeming the code because both Twitch Prime and the RuneScape site just couldn't handle the load. It was absolutely terrible. I don't know. It feels a bit problematic that you can't handle those things.
Well, it's good to know it works in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's UK, US, and Canada.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Also, you can take like a Twitch Prime subscription for like, what is it? 80. I think it's £80 a year. I don't know what the prices over there are, but just just an extra note that this is including a legendary pet, which are really, really helpful. So if you haven't gotten one yet, this might be a way to get it if you would already be interested in something like Amazon or Twitch Prime.
Yep. All right. So how about we end off the RS segment with some good news?
Right. So
what do you got for us this week? A graphical surprise that Jagex was revealing to everyone. I don't have the video up here. I can perhaps pull it up, but tell us what we're looking at.
So, on this week's stream, Jagger showed off the Spring Fair, which you're not really that interested about, I guess. I mean, it's cool, but meh. But they also showed the progress they were have made so far on the Sims Village graphical rework. We knew for a while that they were going to do a graphical rework on Camelot and Sims Village. I think we mentioned it on the episode where they just had like the white box face done. Right now they have like pretty much all the concept art, all the exteriors. They have done a bit of modeling, and I have to say it looks absolutely gorgeous. I'm really, really excited about it. I mean, I showed you the picture of how
Yeah,
Camelot
and I
is
got the
gonna
video
fit.
up here right now.
I mean, just the way that Camelot is gonna fit into the environment and really look impressive is, I mean, that's really, really great work. Like right now it's all a bit white stone village, but it's gonna get its own theme. They're gonna add a whole bunch of lore around the Seers Inn because right now they're pretty light on lore. So we're gonna find out who they are, what exactly they do. And they're also gonna make the area a bit more attractive for like skilling, so the bank location will be a bit more central, like the spinning wheel for the flags will be in a slightly more convenient position. So hopefully it will make people go back there and make it a bit more of like a secondary hub again, because Sears Village is pretty significant, has a lot of stuff.
Yeah, one of my uses for Sears Village back in the day was cutting maple logs to woodcut.
And also like looking at making some more obvious hint about the elemental workshop being there. So that's really cool. They're really incorporating that into the design as well. And they also talked a bit about the reason why they're working towards like Camelot now. Is that they really focused on graphically reworking the free-to-play areas, that they realized that the members areas were falling more and more behind, which is why they're sort of picking those areas up now. And they're looking at after this, like, because around Sears Village, if you move further, there's lots of like bits and pieces, like the Ranging Guild and the Fishing Guild and the Sears Tower and a bunch of stuff, Legends Guild.
Yeah, those are all
So,
very old.
yeah, but it's like lot more, it's not like a consistent whole and more like bits and pieces. So after the Sears Village update, they might sort of do those all in one go, or maybe like bits and pieces at a time. And after that, they want to move like either towards Valekar or, of course, the big project being Ardoin, which they did mention. And I was like a sort of fangirling there. I
Yeah, I
was
think
really,
Ardoin could definitely come in there and
I am
have some
so
theme
excited about
stuff.
Ardoin rework
Yeah, me
already.
too.
Just make it an expansion. That's fine by me. Like completely redo, because Ardoin is not that heavy on content. Like I think you could make a full-on expansion out of Ardoin if you add a bunch of content into the city. So maybe. But yeah, really excited about those changes. Sadly, the project is sort of on hold right now, due to other things having precedence. I think this is a passion project, but all in all, this looks like one of the more impressive graphical reworks so far. And my recently when I did the Easter quest, I actually got like a good look on Port Swim with like NXT
Right.
Ultra draw distance. I mean, it does look gorgeous. So, I mean, just imagine the whole world slowly getting that makeover.
Yeah, and to go back to Camelot, they're actually basing these on real life Camelot roof tiles and Scottish mountains.
I mean, it's gonna incorporate into the environment so much better and so much nicer. It's a really old area, so yeah, it looks really, really cool, I think.
Yeah. And I think that if these kind of updates were to just appear, I think, and they were on this week's update as well as the achievements, I think we would have been a lot more happier coming into this podcast. Perhaps we should have started with this part of the week, hey? Maybe this is what we should have started with.
Yeah. All right, let's go back and do it all over again.
All right. Well, if you guys wanted to look at some of these, you can see the concept art and the white boxing at YouTube/RuneScape. They have this week's stream up there, and you can look at it and see the entire area. And you did mention the hops patch was moving, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, the hops patch will also be one of the things that they're actually moving into the city because it doesn't get much use.
Yeah.
The coal trucks, you will be able to like pick up the coal, I think, really close to the furnace. So those will get more
use. That's
going to
be
like,
very interesting with the mining and smithing rework, given coal is
moving. So like all in all, I think they're sort of also reconsidering like the design choices of the area. And I mean, there used to be this like the time where... So the reason that a lot of furnaces and anvils are actually really far removed from each other is because it used to be the most viable money-making method.
Yep. Steel bars, 600 GP each.
Yeah, but also like rune was big back in the day, right? It was the high, like pretty much the highest level you could create. So that's why these things were all very, very far apart. You still see it in a lot of places in the world. So... it's good that now that we are so much further in the future, they start reconsidering this thing. So, yeah.
You know, I was actually thinking this week that I should upgrade my GPU. I mean, you're probably wondering where this comes from, but obviously you want to run RuneScape on Ultra, and I can do that with no FPS problems, but that sends my fan through the roof, and oh boy, is that loud.
I mean, it's really enjoyable playing RuneScape on higher draw distances, especially in the areas that they redid. I mean, it's a bit depressing in places like...
I wonder, does the game support 4K? I know that'd be hard on the text, but does the game support 4K resolution? Do we know?
I do not know. I have a normal HD monitor.
Yeah, and I don't have a long enough HDMI cable to hook it up to the TV, so... Anyways, all right. So as you can see, Shane and Sirion are now happy.
Yes. I think it is good that we ended on this, because otherwise we would have been in a bummer mood the rest of the night.
That's right. All right. Well, we're going to move on to questions right now. We got two of them. I'll read the first one from Thieves. Sound good?
Sure.
All right. Hey, guys. We've had the Menaphos Library competition, a combat skill pet competition, and Mod Kelpie asking for Sears Village lore submissions all from this month alone. Dare I say it, but this sounds like RuneScape 3 is beginning to take a leaf out of the old school RS book with more community-created ideas, which honestly excites me. It's like Rune Labs Lite. What are your thoughts on Jagex using the player base as a creative well? Thanks, Boyos. I think creativity from a lore perspective is fine. I think a lot of the players have a very in-depth knowledge of the lore of the game, more so than some of the J-Mods. Obviously not the ones who are in charge of quests, but more so than some of the J-Mods. So I see absolutely no problem with allowing the players to, you know, create a lore submission for Sears Village or Menaphos, for example. Where I do think that we start to see problems, however, is when you have these lore submissions and then they turn into quests. So that would be the concern that I would have.
I mean, it's incredible how much effort people put in things like lore. Like, we used to have Wolfie and the clan who had like this huge database of lore collected from so many sources and books. It's like, I could never come up with the patience to do that, and I think this is a great way to sort of use that effort into a positive way for everybody. And I have no problem at all with like having player submissions in the game. And I mean, for quests, it's on the edge there, because it's like it's a bit more serious, I guess, than books. But all in all, it's also canon. But like when people are being consulted, like when players are being consulted on mechanics, that's when I start screaming and saying, please don't, because that is not a good idea. We need experts to make those decisions. And of course, we always need Jarek's moderation on this and saying, yes, this is canon. Because when it's in the game, it's canon, right? Or that they say, no, this is completely not what happened. You're going to leave it out. But using these competitions, you sort of have this filter still. And it's also sort of, I wouldn't say anonymized, but also in a way that Jarek can sort of get around easier to rejecting player ideas than in a very public spot. So, I don't know. They seem to be making a big shift lately. I agree. I guess it's good. I just hope it's not a signal that they're running out of creativity themselves.
I'm gonna step out on a ledge and say that no, we're not running out of creativity.
No, I mean, I doubt it. I mean, only very recently we got Penguins in Space the musical. I mean, that was pretty creative. So,
and that might have been better in some people's opinion than the actual Penguin Quest that came out.
Arguably, yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that at this point, given the fact that we're a game that's 15 years old, you know, the players definitely do have a stake in that. And like you said, it's got to be separated from mechanics and lore. And, you know, there's no problem with that. And it can be made really, really immersive. Like, for example, Star Trek Online. I'm going to bring that up again, because in the time that Star Trek Online was set, the Enterprise E, which was the ship that debuted in Star Trek First Contact, was recently destroyed. So anybody who watches Star Trek knows that there's always going to be a new Enterprise that comes up, right? So when Star Trek Online started, there was no Enterprise. So what did the game developers do? They said to the player base and community, someone out there, design us the Enterprise F. And and they showed us the top three submissions. The top two made it into game. The top two one became the 1,000-day veteran reward. But the top one became the Enterprise F, and that is the largest hero ship in game. And it features in numbers of missions, and that's player designed.
I assume Star Trek Online is non-canonical.
Yes. Yeah. But, I mean, at this point, it's the closest thing we have to canon for anything post-Star Trek Nemesis. So a lot of us who play it consider it the unofficial continuation of that storyline.
Cool.
But, so, I mean, you can have great things happen when you open up suggestions from your community. So,
I mean, we heard it in the documentary. There was this comment about old school OS, how player-driven that is. And that clearly works out for that community. And they're different communities altogether, but it looks like Jagex is sort of exchanging ideas between the two products they have now and seeing if they can get the successful ones to work in the other one.
Yep. And maybe this is a step towards reunification.
That's never going to happen.
We can hope. But all right. You want to take this one from Wiley?
Sure. Hey guys, Wiley again. Do you guys think the Dominion Tower needs a rework? Can I cry for a bit now? About the Dominion Tower. In the make it more challenging, rewarding way, not the easier way. It requires 110 combat, but most of the bosses are under level 90 and can be killed in a few hits from a high combat player. Secondly, do you think we will ever get more information on the Camel God, or do you think the lore will be changed to directly state that the Camel God is Actanikos? If there is a separate god dedicated to camels, do you think Actanikos' loyalty to Zaras would come into question? Also, do you think Saren will try to befriend any Majarat in the future, or vice versa?
All right, so okay, three-part question, Dominion Tower.
First of all, I'm proud of myself for pronouncing Actanikos.
Yes, I'm not even going to try. That's why I gave this question to you.
Oh, that's what this is about, then.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay, you can answer the part of Actanikos then.
Oh boy. Dominion Tower. That's a bit of a sore spot for us, isn't it?
I mean, it's definitely for me.
And me as well.
It's the last task for Taskmaster for me. I need like six more Dominion pages.
See,
no more probably, but yeah.
I get what he means by higher combat and whatnot, but Dominion Tower was supposed to be the showcase of quest bosses, with maybe them being a little bit harder. And if I recall, we already have a hard mode for Dominion Tower, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. They could potentially come out with a hard mode for Dominion Tower that would, I think, make them a little bit more difficult and challenging. I think the unfortunate side of this would be that there would probably be comp and task set requirements behind this. So I don't want to say that just yet, that they should do this, because I still got to go there and complete all of those Dominion Journal pages that you're working on.
Basically, Wiley just asked this question again in like a year or so. Might get a different answer.
Yeah, after we're finished.
Yeah.
So right now, we don't want it to get any harder. But, you know, I can definitely see why this is the case. But at this point, I don't think it's right to add more challenge to the boss critters when we have tasks and achievements there that require us to just sit there and do various things for a long time in order to complete it.
See, there's a lot of bosses you can kill quite easily in Dominion Tower, I admit. But the difficulty in the Dominion Tower is not necessarily the individual bosses. The challenge of the Dominion Tower is doing the multiple Dominion bosses in a row. There's like two main modes, which is Endurance and Climber. In Endurance, you have to do as many quest bosses in a row without restocking, which is different than just doing a single boss. It's more challenging. Like, you can't just do one and then reset all the time. That's not the fun. You want to go to higher floors. And for Endurance, you do get to restock. We get more and more handicaps over time. So that, again, adds like a new layer of challenge on top of the existing bosses. So I do not think it necessarily needs to be harder, because the whole concept is that you take these bosses, and when you get stronger, the individual bosses stop becoming a challenge, but you can make a challenge out of doing them repeatedly or with new penalties applied to them. And then there's always a challenge mode where you like have to kill two nomads in a row. And like, I was almost max combat when I tried that. I can tell you it's not that easy. Like,
yeah.
The same with like killing, I think you have to kill like a bunch of evil chickens. I think you have to do like all desert treasure things at the same time, like a bunch of challenges that are definitely not that easy. So there's still enough challenge there to be done. But I do think that it does become a bit grindy at some point. And while I'm happy if one of the really easy bosses shows up, because it's very easy Dominion rating, it also feels very repetitive to just hit a boss with like one Draigo hit and just move on. So yeah, I mean, I think the Dominion Tower in general is not great design, but whether it has to be harder, I don't think so.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. As for the second one, I don't have the lore drops from the camels in the desert, so I don't know, but I'm guessing that might be a logical point where you would get these lore pieces for Actonikos.
Well done. I mean, there has to be a camel god.
I believe it's plays such a huge role in the desert that there definitely should be something along that. And it doesn't necessarily need to be god just for the camels. It could be that the camels are aligned to one of the existing desert gods, maybe.
And that could be Actonikos. I mean, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I have to admit, my desert pantheon lore is really not that strong. I don't know that much.
Colton, if you're listening, correct us next week if we're wrong. Thank you.
Yeah, I should probably read up on the desert pantheon a bit, but
we're gonna need that for Menaphos when that's coming later this year.
Yeah, that's gonna be really exciting.
And see, this is why we want to be excited about Menaphos.
Maybe some informer writer could like do a little revision of all the desert pantheon stuff.
I'll get them on that. Yeah. Just as long as it's not historical revisionism.
I mean, I did it for back in the time for like the old High Elf story. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
That's how
you and I got started. I was making a video format of that, and this was before I officially joined Clan Quest, and I asked you guys for submissions.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. And separate god, yes. Loyalty to Zaros. Desert, maybe?
What does Zaos have to do with the desert? Oh my! Oh, I feel so bad about not knowing that.
Well, that's where the desert temple was that we activated the ancient magic spells first, and that was at the very edge of the Majora territory, going down from the wilderness back in the old order. When you consider that the Sentistan Temple is right north of the desert, and if you compare the architecture of Sentistan versus some of the stuff you see in the desert, they do look kind of similar.
Okay, well, you seem to know more about this than me, so you're probably the one to answer this question.
I'm just firing at the hip here. I'm just assuming that they could come into question together because they are, you know, somewhat limited, and that's where we first learned of Zaros and Heart of Gelinor, so anything can happen there. So I'm going to say maybe. And then for the second one, Saren try to befriend any Majorat in the future.
I doubt it. I don't think.
Yeah, there was too much pain caused there at the end of Children of Ma, I think.
I think the only Majorat that has any chance of getting into contact with Saren is Karshai.
Okay.
That seems to be the only reasonable bloke around there.
Yeah. See, and, you know, it's only been 6 months since we ended the storyline, but it already feels like we need to pick up where we left off and see all the other potential sides of Sliske's endgame with the replays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Though not that I want to induce PTSD, because that panel induced PTSD a couple days before Christmas for everyone. So,
oh, they're making the maze skippable in a rework, so there's a chance I might try to do it again, and this time actually get the cutscenes.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're going to get the whole panel back together when that comes out, because we need to have another look at that.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you for the questions, Thieves and Wily. If you want to send your own in, you can visit update.rsbnb.com/ask, or you can reach us at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632, and you can use that to send us text messages or voicemail. If you play voicemail or send us audio questions to questions@rsbnb.com, we will play them on the show with your lovely voice.
Also, remember that April is coming to an end, so if you have something to ask me, do it now.
Yes, indeed. All right, on to tech news. Facebook, Goofy, VR. First story. They launched something called Facebook Spaces, which is an Oculus Rift plus touch technology. Those will remember from a while back that Facebook purchased Oculus, which is a virtual reality company, with the intention of developing virtual reality and bringing it to the masses. Now, basically what Facebook Spaces is a virtual reality experience that allows people to create avatars that look kind of like your profile picture and maybe a bit what you like. Think of Wii avatars or Xbox avatars, but a little bit sillier.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Hence why they called it Goofy. So basically, up to 4 friends can be logged into their Facebook account, and then they can join a space. And then inside this VR space, they can chat, draw, watch 360-degree videos, make video calls on Messenger, and take VR selfies with their cartoon avatars. So it can also do this based on recently tagged photos. So it can look at your photo and see what it thinks you are going to look like there. So not only are you experiencing the world in virtual reality, you're relying on algorithms to take that picture of Sirion and convert it to an avatar.
Oh. Okay. I'm not entirely sure what to think of this. I mean, the concept is really cool. Like, especially, I mean, for, say, people in Conquest, right? We live miles apart. And, like, people get to know each other. Like, friendships are being born that way. And this could be a way to hang out, sort of, together, I guess. Then again, I am still not convinced that VR is going to be something that comes to the masses.
Yeah, it's not going to be, because you still have to wear those large VR sets. And last I checked, the Oculus itself was a $600 piece of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not something you're going to invest in unless you have some VR experience that you want to use daily and you want to use fluidly. So
I mean, I would like to be it to be like a holodeck like experience, but I feel the technology is just not there yet to make it really enjoyable. And a lot of concept is really, really cool. Like, consider like, you know, having a friend on the other side of the world and sort of being able to see them in front of you. But I feel it will feel.
But if it's
so
just an
artificial.
Avatar, it's artificial, too artificial.
I mean, if they try doing it realistically, I think that would not look right. You get the old uncanny thing. So I think they made the right choice going with the Avatar thing, but that also has its drawbacks. And this sounds like something that would be fun to try once, but not something you would do on a regular basis. So
yeah.
And there's already so much happening on the social, like in the social area, like with terms of social networks. And I'm not entirely sure if a new thing like this will really hook on. Like, is this a sort of like, what was it called? Second Life? Virtual Life? There was this whole online MMO thing.
Second Life, I think it was, or something.
Yeah,
like
something
that.
Like that. That was sort of a big thing. This is on a smaller scale, I guess, with just a couple of friends. But like, am I supposed to compare it to that? Maybe not, but it comes to mind.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact it's so virtual like this kind of it is an experiment, obviously, and the fact that it's still being developed just shows that this is kind of the direction they want to go. And in the future, they might be able to expand on this once camera technology has improved, for example, and is able to model someone in 3D space, which is a very hard thing to do. But developers are going to have access to this week, believe it or not, so they can incorporate their apps into it.
Into like the spaces?
Yeah, so into Facebook spaces. So that's
that would be interesting.
Yeah, that's like, a thing that they're going to let people try.
Like, what if it allows you to maybe like play like games like chess or something? That might be interesting. I don't know, but I haven't really tried a lot of VR, so I don't know how much different it would be as experience somebody over like voice chat. Like, what would be the difference?
I don't know. Because if you're thinking about VR and voice chat and tying that all together, they got to go together. But at the same time, it all comes down to how fluid that VR experience is going to be.
Yeah.
But I think this kind of just shows where Facebook wants to go with this. And eventually they basically want to be able to connect people through a virtual reality technology, whether it's Oculus or something else, that's going to decrease the distance between people.
In a couple of years, you don't even have to leave the house anymore to go to work and work in the office.
That's a scary thought.
Just step into a Facebook space.
Oh, boy.
It's going to solve a lot of housing issues.
Well, there's one way of looking at it. Just put everyone in a pod and...
I live in London, and I always think about housing issues. It's subconscious process always going on.
All right. Next story is from Apple. Apple announced this week that they are aiming to end mining and use 100% recycled materials for their products. So this basically means that they would be purchasing the raw materials that have already been used in other electronics and then recycled after the fact. And the reason they do this is because mining their raw materials is their most carbon-intensive and most expensive part of manufacturing their products. So by doing this, they would, in essence, create what they're calling a closed-loop supply chain, and they would stop having to rely on extracting minerals and whatnot from the earth to create products. Of course, when you think about it, it means that somebody else is doing it, but it's already been used and broken down and is going to be recycled into other things for the Apple products. So the reason they're doing this is because much of what you put into an iPhone isn't recycled, but they want to change that by aggressively using components taken from old iPhones and other things that they purchase from other suppliers that they're calling high quality recycled metals. So basically they're saying we're going to use recycled components in your iPhone. Now, I think that at the end of the day, as long as the user doesn't feel any difference from this, which they shouldn't because that's what modern recycling is about, it'll be just fine. But on the other hand, you got to keep in mind that, you know, someone else out there is still mining these metals from the earth, extracting them and causing the mess that comes with that. And one thing that this report doesn't address is that Apple's factories over time have become notoriously bad for workers' conditions as well in China and whatnot. Hence, some of the push to move Apple manufacturing back to the U.S. for products. So there's a bit of give and take with this report. Some things in there are acceptable and make sense. Other things in there are being extended a bit far by basically saying Apple is taking the burden off themselves, even though someone else is still mining the ore to begin with in the first place. But also here, another great thing I think about this is the fact that Apple is doing this without being forced to do this by anyone. And I think when you have a company that is making these changes on their own without having their hand forced by regulations or excessive taxes, you create a more genuine drive from that company to do that and ultimately a better end goal at the end of the day. So hopefully, just like with Apple's privacy stance last year, other companies will jump on board and try and adopt some of these stances that Apple has.
I mean, you say Apple is not forced to do this, but in a way it is, because like some of the components that go into phones or any electronic device are really, really rare on Earth. I think,
yeah,
like lithium-ion batteries, for example, like they use components that we don't have a lot of, and we're going to run out of the supply in the next few decades. So there is a necessity to move off mining and using recycled materials. It's not an immediate necessity, but I mean, you have to move over at some point, and you can't wait for the last moment and be caught off guard. So
yeah,
that's a subtlety you should keep in mind.
It's good they're doing it. It's just a question of what's going to happen when we run out of lithium at the end, right? Because we're not going to be able to keep keep expanding out what's mined and just keep recycling it. I don't think.
Oh, that is true. So like, it's not all just we want to be green and environmental and all. Like there is a necessity of moving to recycling, and it's good that Apple takes the first step. I think it's a company that does very well in setting the example in these kind of matters. And I mean, it is still Apple who works around the elite and high-end, high-quality devices. So I am not worried too much that the quality will suffer under the recycling process. Because
yeah, given the quality standard, you won't notice the difference.
Given the quality standard, Apple holds up. Like, I'm pretty sure they have tested so much by now that they're sure they can retain that quality level. So all in all, it's good. It's also verification that there is a way to make the entire mobile market, or like the entire tech market for that matter, sort of more sustainable. So yeah, all in all, good news. And definitely something that we'll probably see more of in the next few years, given the limited supply of stuff.
Exactly. You said the lithium, and that's the primary example on this, is that that's going to run out. And so unless we come up with a better battery technology that uses less resources, we got to figure out how to be more efficient with lithium. All right. Did you have anything else on that one? Are you ready to move on to our last one?
I thought I heard some news about the inventor of the... Yeah. So I think the person that invented the lithium-ion battery actually invented an even better one.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me. There's lots of battery process progress happening.
That person's like 94 right now. Yeah, he invented a new thing. And that's a fun fact. Like at like, I think it was like 74. He was told he was too old to be a physicist. It's a solid state battery, so there's no liquid components
Oh,
in it.
that's good. That way, then we won't have any Note 7 issues.
Yeah. But
Alrighty.
yeah, so that I mean, you mentioned maybe if you find a better alternative for lithium-ion batteries, well, there might be one. So
All right. So, next piece of tech news: Google is set to be building an ad blocker directly into Google Chrome. Okay.
can you repeat that? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, does it? Google is planning to add an ad blocker to Google Chrome and possibly turn it on by default for all users.
Please don't tell me it's going to block everything that's non-Google.
And that's exactly what the initial thoughts are, is that it is going to be an ad blocker that's going to target specific types of ads that users find particularly annoying, like popovers and audio and video players. And this report initially came from the Wall Street Journal, and it says that Google doesn't love the deals it often has to make with third-party ad blockers like Adblock Plus, which require payment of fees in some case to whitelist ads by companies like Google. So the idea behind this is that unobtrusive ads, i.e. from Google, would still make their way through this. And, you know, with Google controlling the gates to this, it would be up to them to decide which ads are acceptable and which aren't.
I mean, this makes sense. I mean, I think a lot of people use ad blockers not just to block the ads, but because they're often annoying or even unsafe. And I think Google has worked really, really hard in making an ads environment that is also still very user-friendly. Like, I think Google ads are, by ad standards, really, really nice. Like, they're
Oh yeah,
not
they're
generally not.
non-obtrusive.
So, I mean, Google works on that really hard, presumably. And then you get these ads that are quite annoying, and people start using ad blockers, and ad blockers might be a bit not very picky, start blocking out Google ads, and they lose revenue over that. So by taking this into their own hands and by providing the users with a good default option, they might convert people from not using their own ad blockers that also block out Google ads and getting more revenue that way. But I still find it a bit shady that the company that is sort of the big ads marketplace gets to be the ad blocker as well. That feels something that like that feels like they have a very powerful position all of a sudden, and
Yeah,
I'm not sure how that makes me feel.
and you know, a thing with that is, if this is the case, why not just give users an option to pay for a subscription to Google Chrome like you do for YouTube Red that lets you skip ads on YouTube, except this would let you remove all ads from the internet and Google would subsidize. Because, you know, that's the number one issue of running a website today is that you can run a website and you can bring people to it. But if you're not having ads on that website, you're not making money on it. And it's very hard to make money these days with advertising. It was a lot easier back in the day, and it's still kind of that landscape has changed because so many people use Adblock. So, from a publisher's perspective on my end, this idea is concerning to me. But also, on the other hand, I hope and I would like there to be some kind of subscription model here so that there can still be things paid if people are using this ad blocker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I don't know what ad system you do use on like RSBNP, but
Google.
let's say you. I mean, if you use Google Ads and people start defaulting to this, and this doesn't block Google Ads, I mean, you might
Yeah,
see
then
more
we'll be
revenue coming
fine.
for that.
We'll be fine.
So
But
it really like the news in and itself can be positive and negative at the same time. It really depends on what Google is going to do with it, and who knows? Maybe because they have this incorporated app blocker functionality in their browser. they might add that subscription model. This might be a step up to that.
Yeah, and I would be fine with that. I think that's something that's needed, because I feel as though it's a way of taking rather than giving back, and it's just a side of the equation that's ignored all too often.
Yeah, I mean, like over the past year or so, I guess like a lot of these things, like user trust, like the privacy.google.com website, that kind of stuff, Google has sort of shown their willingness to take these concerns seriously. So I don't expect there to be some evil ideas behind this, but it feels like they're really on some slippery ground here and have to be really, really, really careful about how they're going to approach this. So yeah, definitely something to keep our eyes on.
Yeah, and I mean, you would never thought Google would advocate for this, but obviously no, the ad situation has got to a point where they need something like this.
It feels so what's the word? It feels very paradoxical. It's not the right word, maybe, but like, it doesn't make any sense that an ads company does this. But if you look at the reasons below it, the ads blocker and the ads market is a really weird place these days. And it sort of makes sense that they want to go here, but it is scary.
Yep. Alrighty. Well, let's move on to some other things then. I did mention that we are going to basically just have a quick look at the skill of the month, because it is one with very few people in it. And JamAndy52 still in first place, and that's bad. Still in second place, flatlined. Flash in third. And that's what I meant for the skill of the month update. So,
okay,
yeah, we do have some achievements this week. I'll handle the first few days up to the 15th, and then you can take the rest. So, starting off on April 19th, Warrock got 99 magic on the 19th. Also on the 19th, Chodo 3000 with 99 invention. Moving on to the 18th, we have Simbakuro with 99 Hunter and 99 Woodcutting. Then on to the 17th, we got Wolfie with 99 Divination, Trips Travis with 99 Prayer, Wolfie with 99 Construction, Fields of Hope, 99 Hunter, Wolfie again, 99 Woodcutting, Fields of Hope, 99 Crafting, Runecrafting, and Invention on April 16th. And then on the 15th, Protoman 807 with 99 Invention, and Torugry with 99 Cooking.
I'm just checking if there's no mention of Actanikos in the second half. Wolfie got 99 Fletching and 99 Windcrafting on April 14. Also on April 14, Felion got 120 Invention. Then on April 13, Latir Man got 99 Fishing, and Fields of Hope got 99 Agility, 99 Invention, and 99 Woodcutting. Wow. On April 12, Dire Straits got 120 Hunter, and Simbakura got 99 Construction, 99 Slayer, and 99 Divination.
Congratulations, everyone. Nice achievements.
Some people got a lot of achievements last week.
Yeah, Fields of Hope and Wolfie. Oh, boy.
And Simbakura as well. Right. Five of them. Yeah.
Very nice.
Some people going for Max then.
Yep.
So I've been setting an example on the podcast. Well, that's what I would like to believe, at least.
Oh, that's so funny. That's what I'd like to believe, Sirion 2017. All right. So, I believe you got a pick of the week, that's going to look great.
Yes. So, I mean, I think everybody knows my obsession with game mechanics, how much I like them. Maybe if there was like a clan game mechanics, I would go for that.
And you've made a game or two before?
Yeah, I as well. So, this pick of the week sort of really goes into that, and it's a YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is, I mean, it's called Game Maker's Toolkit or Mark Brown, depending on how you want to look at it. So Mark Brown is, I don't know if it's like a famous game developer or something. He's a YouTuber who talks about game mechanics on his YouTube channel. And the main series on the channel is called Game Maker's Toolkit. And what he does is he takes some sort of like mechanic, usually like in one single game, and explains why that game does it well and how other games generally do it, and just in general how things work. So topics that have like been discussed, for example, are level design, especially in Mario games, or things like health mechanics, things like nostalgia. Fog of War, I think, has been done before. So like lots of little things, and sometimes like a spotlight to a specific game. And they have really interesting insights. For I think even if you sort of like a hobby game mechanic enthusiast, that's maybe how I would describe myself. I think it would be really interesting. Another series he has on the channel is Boss Keys, in which he looks at all the Zelda dungeons. So if you don't know Zelda games, like the main component of the games are often like little dungeons that consist of like puzzles and a bit of exploration. And
So
he
like
goes through,
dungeoneering.
yeah, pretty much, except for they're like pre-designed. And what he does is like goes into those all the different games and has like diagrams on how the layouts for these dungeons look, how they changed over time, the linearity, the exploration, that kind of stuff. It is really interesting how to look at it, and it feels, I mean, it's not a science, but it looks like a really objective look at this, and you can see the mechanics he likes and dislikes, but it's really good to see some more about it. And I think by looking at these kind of videos, you can sort of also learn, like, or be taught a way of looking at mechanics. I think if you get a bit more of a wider perspective of how games do and start seeing deeper into how things are designed, I think you can build a bigger appreciation for games that are mechanically sound. Maybe the side effect is that you start noticing flaws in game design in games that
And
are
that could
not
be
mechanically
annoying to you
sound.
if you're very anal about those kind of things. But I think you hit the nail on the head here, is that it highlights what game design mechanics are. So you can maybe start justifying to yourself about why a specific game made a certain decision and how that affects the gameplay and ultimately how that affects you. Because I think, from my perspective, for far too long, too many people just look at a game and see what exactly is happening there. And ultimately, if you are enjoying the game, it's fine. But if you're having problems with the game, it is something that people tend to like to write home about a lot. But it's not something people are really qualified to talk about. So this could help you in a way to understand things. Like, for example, I just found a video here, five game design innovations from 2016, and one of them is the Overwatch Play of the Game feature, which is really nice to see.
I mean, it sort of makes you appreciate things in games. Like one of them is like a pretty famous one is he describes the game design in Mario games and how the levels all follow a certain structure, and he sort of takes apart the first 10 or 15 seconds of the very first level of the very first Super Mario Bros. And what you don't realize is how carefully crafted that is to introduce you to a lot of the game mechanics. It explains to you that Goomba is bad, Mushroom is good, you can hit the little question mark things. Like, all of that is put in such a way that you hit things maybe accidentally, but it's all designed in such a way that you do it, sort of forced to do it. And that way, sort of find out what things do by forcing you down a certain path, but it doesn't feel forced at all. Like the first question mark box in the first level is put in such a place that if you're a normal player and try to avoid the Goomba by jumping over it, you hit the box and find out you can hit them for coins. Like that kind of small stuff. And like these
And that's a
videos are.
staple of Mario that you just learned by doing it.
Yeah, and these game like these videos are full of it, and I'm sure that if you look through this, you will recognize a whole bunch of games you have played, and you can see what kind of cool stuff they do. And I think they teach you a very interesting like appreciation to game development, and starts to sort of unveil the real complications and how hard it is to actually design a game. It's a lot harder, I think, than a lot of people believe. And I think this is really good at exposing those things and making them understandable for the masses. So that's why I think it's a great channel to follow. It doesn't have a high number of videos, and they're often very short, which means I can often watch them as they come out, which is really cool. But yeah, they do come out regularly, like every 2 weeks or so, or every week. So yeah, give that a try. Look at some videos that might look interesting. And I don't know, maybe you find some mechanics that you can apply to Inkscape and look at it that way.
Yeah, make some great suggestions.
Yeah. Maybe we should send this to Jagax.
I think that might be pushing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Alrighty. Well, what have you been up to this week in RS? Apparently you said you've been keeping on the Max track.
Well, I have Max, right? So
right. And you said you were an inspiration. So what have you been up to?
Not much actually. I was visiting family last weekend over Easter, so I didn't have my computer, so I just played on my laptop, which blocked a bunch of stuff. But I've actually been focusing on doing some clue scrolls because I hadn't done those for a while. Found out that my RNG is really, really not that good. Every time I reroll, my rewards are halved. So yeah, a bit unlucky. But otherwise, I was trying to work on some completionist requirements, just taking them off. For some reason, I don't comprehend. I feel less motivated doing them now. Ever since the update from Tuesday, there might be a correlation between the two. Don't know exactly what it would be. Yeah, that was it. I've taken it a bit easy, I think. I've got to find out what my next big steps are, I guess, in the game. But for now, just keep on trucking.
All right. As for me this week in RuneScape, I have I went back to the Ark and I did some island hopping for some resources and whatnot, and I made some shark soup. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the best way to say this without sounding like an idiot. I went back to play our own ports, and I discovered that a good chunk of the scrimshaws that are available, I never actually unlocked. So I'm back finishing the scrimshaws on ports. Yeah, I finished everything else except for the scrimshaws. So,
wow, there's such good money. Like, I've been starting to do ports again, like last 2 weeks. And the millions start rolling in, basically.
And like, that, and I was looking and I was talking with people about that, and oh, lo and behold, there we go. So I think the idea at this point is to get some port stuff rolling, to get some of the resources in, sell the stuff there, scrimshaws maybe, but also to get chimes from the Ark so I can purchase ancient bones for the scrimshaws from that store mm-hmm. there. Because, I mean, this store exists. Why not put it to use, right?
Yeah, I'm working towards the completionist requirements. I actually got all the completionist requirements done. I just need the trimmed requirements, basically. But, yeah, I mean,
why not?
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would grind for bones, but it might be pretty good money. I would have to do the math. Because scrimshaws, they sell for like 3 million each, right?
Yeah.
Now, so,
and it's a question of how quick you can get the bones. So, I haven't done the exact calculations, but the Ark is more for invention, whereas the ports is to complete my scrimshaws. And aside from that, herb farming runs, some herb lore along the way. And when I was cleaning herbs to make my potions, I got Herbert the Herb Lore pet this week.
So how many pets do you have now, Dan?
Three. Divination, wow. Herb lore, and farming.
I still just have the one.
Yeah, and I think it was only 18 million herb lore XP. So it wasn't that much.
Past 99, though, right?
Yes, past 99. Past 99. And of course, that's just going back to August 22nd when they came out. So I checked that number and there we go. So past 99. We still don't know what the exact rates are on that, so it'll be interesting to see. But aside from that, I figured we would also share a YouTube video that I was a part of in the production of it this week, and that's a commentary for, of course, the game we were just talking about, Overwatch. You know, in addition to RuneScape stuff, we are experimenting with some other things, and one of those things that we do is we play a lot of Overwatch. So what we have started doing is commentating some of our Overwatch competitive matches. And these are people who you might know from the RSVB community. Trekkie and Earth come to mind. Of course, Earth from Clan Quest as well. So we commentate these Overwatch games, talk about what we were doing. And I think if anyone is interested in competitive Overwatch, you'll get an interest out of some of these videos. Because this week we put up a video on the channel where we won the first round, and then we went down by two. This is a best out of three, so you got to win all three of them. So I guess that would be best out of five then, maybe? Because you got to get to three first. You got to win three.
Yeah, that's best out of five.
Okay, so it's best out of five. And we went down, we got the first one, then we went down by two. We lost horribly, and then we made some changes, came together as a team, and just completely demolished them on the last two phases. And, you know, it couldn't have been any better. It was as if we drew it up this way. And the core message of this video, just to give you guys a bit of a preview of what you're going to be seeing, is it's perseverance and teamwork. And in general, that applies to life as well, that you never want to give up if you're doing something. Because if you do something half-heartedly, you're going to carry
that. You got things like the achievement system this week.
That's one example. Or you think you're going to do well in a video game, but you don't manage to end up finishing at the end of the day, which we did completely the opposite here. So there's some good tips here and whatnot, and you can look at some Roadhog gameplay, which is a tank here. So a link will be in the show notes to this at update.rsbnb.com. So give it a watch. Let us know what you think of this new idea. We have other videos on there of Overwatch, and be expanding to some other interesting things as time goes on. So update.rsbnb.com to find the link to that. Anyways, that's all I got for this week. Do you have anything else? Achievement system aside.
Let's just forget about that as quickly as possible.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you for sharing your time with us, everyone, and we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Until then.